Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
In the summer of 2015, Dee Dee Blanchard was found dead in her home, and her severely ill daughter, Gypsy, was missing. Early in the investigation, the local sheriff would tell the media that things are not always as they appear, and boy was he right. Who killed Dee Dee Blanchard? What happened to her daughter, Gypsy? And what dark secret has the family been hiding for almost two decades? This is True Crime Cast.
Welcome once again to True Crime Cast. I'm Jamie, as always, here with John. What's up?
Hey, man. It's a beautiful day outside. My voice sounds like an old man. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we kind of covered that on Bless Their Hearts last week, but it's not because you're sick, right?
I feel great. I feel better than I felt in years, but I am taking a new medicine that's going to temporarily change my voice. So bear with me for a week or two, and I'll be back to old redneck John.
Are we sure this is temporary, or do I need to search for a new partner?
I'm hopefully optimistic that this is temporary. Okay. Wait, what did you say? I'll search for a new person?
Oh, no, I didn't say that. Whatever. Yeah, guys, we're going to jump right into the case today. We're still hoping to get to 100 Patreon members, but we'll talk about that later. I think we've got a good one. This is a very requested case.
This is one that I've talked to a lot of people about. There's been a documentary on it, and a lot of people are just really, really interested. And Jamie, you have done a lot of the research on this one, so I'm going to let you get the ball rolling.
We are going to talk today about the Gypsy Rose Blanchard and Dee Dee Blanchard case. Now, for starters, the things I've listened to, whether it's newscasts or whatever, sometimes I hear it Blanchard, sometimes I hear Blanchard. John and I are going to go with Blanchard because that's kind of how it's said where we live. Dee Dee was the mother to Gypsy, and that's ultimately where we're going to end up, is talking about their relationship and some awful things that happen. But before we get started, I want to talk to you about Dee Dee's childhood. Dee Dee was born in Louisiana in 1967. She was one of six kids, and she grew up in a home where she was asked to care for her mother quite a bit. She would eventually go on as a young adult to become a CNA. She was a nurse's aide. And when her mother got ill in her early 20s, she actually stayed home to care for her mother. Well, I guess the first suspicious thing that happens here is her mother passed away fairly quickly, and there were a lot of family members that accused Dee Dee of kind of letting that happen, of not taking good care of her, of not feeding her, and essentially thinking that her mother starved to death. So right off the bat here, we kind of see that Dee Dee may have some issues in relating to family. When Dee Dee was 24 years old, she met a man named Rod Blanchard. I say man, he was just 17 years old, so he was a young man, much younger than her. I think 7 years is a decent-sized gap at those ages. But they ended up getting married, and they got married because Dee Dee found out that she was going to have a child. Rod felt like he was trying to do the right thing by marrying her, so they got married, they moved in together, and Rod quickly found out that he kind of rushed into this. He and Dee Dee were not getting along. He found her hard to deal with, hard to communicate with. And he actually left Dee Dee shortly before the baby was born, which sounds like an awful thing to do, and it is. But I think people would also knock him if he would have stayed and left after the baby came. So she tried everything to get him to come back, John, but he just didn't do that. He was done with Dee Dee. He did still want to be involved with Gypsy to some degree, and he was early on. But Dee Dee eventually gave birth to that little girl, and they named her Gypsy Rose Blanchard. And it said that Dee Dee really liked the name Gypsy, and the middle name Rose was because Rod liked Guns N' Roses.
That's interesting. We think that Gypsy Rose was born in July of 1991. And I say we think because she has multiple birth certificates. Jamie, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Have you ever tried to order a birth certificate for your children?
I'm an adoptive father, and we had to do that and change a name, and it is an absolute nightmare.
It is a process. So I really don't understand how she was able to get multiple birth certificates with different dates of birth, because you have to have hospital records to get a new birth certificate issued in a lot of cases. So what benefit was she trying to do here to get multiple birth certificates for Gypsy Rose?
See, I don't know. I've looked at this case a ton. Ultimately, she's going to use these birth certificates to try to make Gypsy look younger than she was. So perhaps it was to maintain benefits for longer that you would get for caring for a disabled minor. But I don't know why you need so many. Maybe she thought, oh, well, she's got to get a year younger this year. But it did seem financially beneficial to her, I suppose.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a lot about that in just a minute. But I'm just amazed at how she's able to get these, because in today's world, it is very difficult to get anything changed on your birth certificate. So to issue multiple birth certificates is something that I can't believe was happening. But anyway, shortly after Gypsy was born, her mother became convinced that she had sleep apnea. If you're not familiar with that, that is when you're asleep and you stop breathing. So it's a problem that a lot of adults have, especially if you are a little bit bigger. It's a typical problem that you have, and it leads to a lot of snoring, but essentially you stop breathing. So her mom would take her to the doctor for this, and when she's at the doctor getting tested, they're not able to see this kind of, they're not seeing the symptoms. They're not seeing anything that would point towards sleep apnea. So eventually the doctors send her home with a monitor, and I feel like they're probably doing this just to kind of get her out of their hair a little bit. Like, she's coming so often and kind of the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right, is kind of what I see it. But for these doctors not to see it, man, it kind of reminds me of, you ever taken your car to a mechanic because it has just this really annoying sound coming from it? You get it there to the body shop or the auto shop and you cannot get your car to make that kind of noise again. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just the noise. It's I had a friend who got almost a brand new truck, and it wouldn't start for him. It would take him hours to get it started. Every time he took it in, it started every time for the mechanic, and they would say, can't get it to replicate. I can't fix it.
So look, so Gypsy may have some kind of sleep issue going on, but the doctors aren't seeing it, and it kind of reminds me of the mechanic situation that we've all kind of had that, you know, scenario go on with.
And I hate to... Yeah, you're right. We hate to compare a child's health to a mechanic, but we're just trying to illustrate the fact that the doctors are kind of at a loss there. And there are certainly times when children experience symptoms or adults experience symptoms and doctors can't figure that out. And we're going to see that a lot with Gypsy. Dee Dee continued to tell everybody in Gypsy's life that Gypsy was sick, that she was very ill in a variety of ways. She would ultimately say she had an unidentified chromosomal disorder, which caused a lot of her other problems. So that was kind of her fallback of, we don't have a specific diagnosis, but I promise something's wrong. When Gypsy was 8 or so, she wrecked her grandmother's motorcycle. And I don't know, I feel like if Dee Dee is so protective and she's always so worried about Gypsy, why is she letting her ride a motorcycle at 8 years old? And also, her grandmother had a motorcycle. Now, I realize she, may have been a younger grandmother at that point, but does that surprise you that the grandmother has a motorcycle? Does your grandmother have a motorcycle?
My grandmother does not have a motorcycle. We're just not motorcycle people.
So my family was motorcycle people. I had a motorcycle at 8 years old. It was kind of a little dirt bike, and I actually had a major accident when I was about that age, too. I hit a tree and almost ripped my ear off.
Was your pet raccoon on the motorcycle with you?
No, he wasn't.
Follow up, check Bless Their Hearts episode for that story.
Yeah, that was a good story. Anyway, so she has this accident, and from what medical records show, that she was a little banged up. She had a really bad bruise on her knee. She had a pretty decent cut, but there was no internal significant damage based on the medical records. But Dee Dee would tell everybody that it was a severe injury and it was going to require multiple surgeries to fix. So you think of an 8-year-old who is having these issues and they're going to be immobile for a while. She goes ahead and she gets a wheelchair to put Gypsy in while she's recovering from these leg issues and these surgeries that did not happen. And she would stay in that wheelchair for as long as she lived with DD. She would go on to tell people after that, after presumably these surgeries would have been recovered from, that Gypsy had muscular dystrophy, which is a disease where essentially your, instead of your muscles building, they kind of fade away, and then your body really doesn't have the ability to hold itself together. And oftentimes people don't live past being a teenager at that point. And that's what Dee Dee was telling everybody. That's what she was telling Gypsy's dad and everybody she interacted with. I mentioned earlier, I'm an adoptive father. One of the, my daughter that we've adopted, when she was young, they thought she had this. And I don't know if you remember this, John, but we were going up to Cincinnati Children's Hospital all the time. They were doing these crazy tests. But based on those tests, they were able to find out that she did not have this, whether that's a muscle biopsy. They took blood. They did scans of her spine, and they were able to figure out that this was not something that she had, thankfully. But Dee Dee, despite any tests that were done, is telling people that Gypsy has this horrible, debilitating, ultimately deadly condition.
Yeah, and we'll see that throughout her childhood, Dee Dee is going to spread a lot of lies about Gypsy and the conditions that she has. So you mentioned the chromosomal disorder, you mentioned the muscular dystrophy, but she would also tell people that Gypsy had a degenerative vision disorder and a hearing disorder. So, I mean, she's really covering all the bases here.
And I forgot to put in the outline, John. She also had said that she drooled too much and she had some of her salivary glands removed.
Wow. I mean, you know, so there's just, Dee Dee is saying that this kid has a lot of stuff and really interesting. We're going to talk more about why later. But she would, I think this is one of the biggest ones, Jamie, is she would actually convince people that Gypsy had cancer and actually got Gypsy to shave her head so that it would look like the treatments were causing her hair to fall out. Just amazing stuff and just ridiculous stuff to talk about. So as we said before, with her multiple birth certificates, she would tell everybody that Gypsy was actually much younger than she actually was. And she actually forced Gypsy to behave as a much younger child as well. So people would say that Gypsy had a really squeaky voice and it sounded like a much younger child than she really was. She was made to play with Barbies all the time. If Gypsy did something that was considered too mature from her mother, she would actually get her hand squeezed by her mom. This was an indicator that she needed to stop doing whatever she was doing. And then she would get that followed up by physical abuse in the home later. So this poor kid, man, she's living just a hell of a life. And it's really quite pitiful what she's going through. So Dee Dee was able to get Gypsy treatment for almost all of these things, including, and this one is just awful, she had a feeding tube. And if you're not familiar with that, it's a tube that literally goes through the outside of your body into your stomach. And that is how you feed your child, is through that tube. So you don't eat food like a normal person does. You actually inject it through the tube into your stomach. This had to be, you know, hard for Gypsy to go through, painful for Gypsy to go through. She was taking epilepsy medication. Like you said, she was in wheelchairs and had all kinds of different things for her accessibility. Jamie, you know, a lot of this is on mom, but how in the world are doctors seeing all this and giving this child treatments for things she does not need?
It's really hard to say. And depending on who you talk to, some people are angry at the doctors about this. Some people will defend the doctors. And there's a diagnosis for this, John. It's called Munchausen by proxy, where to get attention or to get financial support, a caretaker like Dee Dee will essentially force treatment and cause ailments to somebody who's being cared for, like Gypsy, in order to benefit from that. So you're projecting these issues onto somebody who doesn't have them so that you could benefit for it. And to maintain that, Dee Dee had a lot of different things she would do. If she would go to a doctor and she would say, this is what my daughter has. I need you to treat it. If they refused, she would go to another doctor. Or if they agreed to treat it and at some point started asking too many questions, she would leave and go to another doctor. So doctor hopping is kind of a common way to get other physicians on board with what's happening. She would choose to transfer records from one physician to another that supported those diagnoses, but ignore the ones that did not. So she was very careful and meticulous in how she communicated with these doctors. And I would think it would be very hard as a physician, John, for somebody to come in and say, look at what my child's going through. And even if you couldn't find out what it was, like the empathetic bedside manner part of your physician training, I think you would want to do something to help, right?
Before we get into that, let's take a quick break.
We're back, and now we'll get back into the case.
Yeah, and I think that Dee Dee was a charming, charismatic person. I mean, she was an educated person. She certainly knew her way around things, and she knew how to talk to doctors because of her profession. So she certainly knew what she was doing and how best to do it, right?
Yeah, she knew what she was doing medically as well. She would purposefully choose conditions or diseases that were based on observation instead of specifically being able to be proven by a blood test or whatever. She never got a cancer diagnosis. She did have a muscle biopsy done for the muscular dystrophy, but we can talk a little bit more about that later. But she would pick conditions and diseases for the most part that were based on observation, meaning she would tell the doctor what she saw and they would treat based on what she said. So she was very crafty in the way that she did that. She also told everyone that Gypsy was mentally disabled and unable to care for herself and unable to have relationships. And perhaps the most important piece of all this, John, is that it's not like she was playing this trick on everybody and Gypsy was in on the trick. Dee Dee had also convinced Gypsy that she had all of these conditions, that she had cancer, that she needed the wheelchair, that she, although she did get up and play sometimes and was forced back into the chair, she had Gypsy fully convinced that all this was real. She believed her mom, and I mean, we talk about power dynamics as it relates to some types of domestic violence. She's raised by this woman who spends all of her time caring for her. Like, why would she not believe her, right? Like, this is her reality. It's all she knows.
Yeah. And even though we can look at Dee Dee and know that this woman has a lot of issues, the child's not going to be aware of that. You know, this is her mom who she loves. And even with the abuse and even with all the things that's going on, you know, it's easy for us to say, you can't love this woman, but for the child, that's her mom. She loves this woman. So, Jamie, after Hurricane Katrina hit, Dee Dee and Gypsy would end up going to a shelter for disabled people, and they would live there for a little while. While she's there, one of Gypsy's doctors recommended that they needed to go to Missouri because there was some treatments in a hospital there that they would be able to get done, and they just weren't able to receive adequate care after Hurricane Katrina. There's just a lot of things were destroyed. A lot of things were shut down. And if you're not familiar with that event, you should look it up. It was a pretty horrible time in Louisiana, New Orleans, and everything that was going on there. So this place in Missouri, they're not able to drive there. So what do they do, Jamie? They get airlifted there. I can't imagine how much that ended up costing.
Right. But it didn't cost Dee Dee anything, though.
Yep. So, but somebody paid for it. We'll not go into that. But just very, very expensive trip, I'm sure. So while they're in Missouri at this hospital, they are staying in a home that is funded solely by donations so that people who are getting treatment will have a place to live. It's actually a great, you know, it's a great thing for families who are dealing with, you know, major issues, and they have to spend weeks and weeks and months at a hospital setting for their child. So this gives them a place to stay. Well, Dee Dee is staying there and Gypsy is staying there. All of that, like I said, is funded by private donations. So they kind of stay in Missouri for a little bit. And Jamie, they actually end up allowing Habitat for Humanity to come in and build them a home. and they make this home wheelchair accessible for Gypsy. And, you know, this is not like a house they are paying for. This is a donated home. So the amount of money that is coming in for these, for this child's issues is just kind of overwhelming to me to really think about. Somebody has given her a home for her and her child to stay in. But that's certainly not it. You know, we've dealt with kids that are really sick, and something that is really good for them is the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So they actually submitted applications for Gypsy, and she got Make-A-Wish Foundation to give them Disney World tickets and concert tickets to go see Miranda Lambert. And they actually, I think, got backstage passes to meet Miranda Lambert. So the amount of money that she is scheming from people and organizations, Jamie, is just outrageous.
It is. And again, we kind of go back to the doctors of how did they not see that something was going on here? Because while she was not thriving, it didn't seem that Gypsy's situation was deteriorating in any way. But we do know of at least one doctor that was on to what was happening, because it was in his records. There was a pediatric neurologist, Dr. Bernardo Flasterstein, that was in Springfield, Missouri, and he was unable to verify any diagnosis that Dee Dee claimed to have for Gypsy. Whether it was by his own tests, he actually, I mentioned the muscular dystrophy biopsy. They had done a muscle biopsy in Louisiana and disproven the fact that Gypsy had muscular dystrophy. And those, she would tell everybody in the wake of Katrina that all those records were lost. She also told people that the birth certificate was lost, and that may have been, John, how she kind of got around the system to get a new one there. But so this doctor in Missouri, he gets the records from Louisiana that Dee Dee says are lost, that show that Gypsy does not have muscular dystrophy. He does a lot of his own tests to disprove several of these conditions. So he knows that something's going on. He made a note in her file that he thought this may be Munchausen by proxy, and that she was over-treating her daughter for conditions she may or may not even have. But for all that we know, he didn't do anything else. Now, he may have contacted the head of the hospital. He may have contacted an attorney. He may have reached out in a way that we're not aware of. But as far as we know, he didn't do anything. And it was around the same time that Gypsy seems to be catching on as well. I mentioned that she could get out of her wheelchair, and if anybody was around, then Dee Dee would just tell her to get back in it. She knew she could walk, and she finally started to put together other things, like, I actually don't have vision problems or hearing problems or these other things my mom keeps telling me about. There's a story from 2010 where she actually knocked on her neighbor's door and asked for a ride to the hospital. Now, she walked up to the door to knock, which, from their neighbor's perspective, they have only ever seen her in a wheelchair, so you would think that would have to be shocking. And then she's asking for a ride to the hospital. Now, the reason she's asking for a ride to the hospital is not because she's sick or one of her conditions has put her in danger or anything like that. She had met a man online that she had been getting into an online relationship with, and somebody had found out about it. And her birth certificate said she was 14 years old, and this man was 19, or he was an adult. And people found out that he was messing with a 14-year-old online, and he was assaulted and admitted to the hospital. So she wanted to get to the hospital to show authorities that she was actually 19 so that he would not get in any legal trouble for having a relationship with her, even though it was pretty much all online. So the neighbor chose not to give her a ride to the hospital. Instead, they called Dee Dee. And of course, Dee Dee was not happy. And she would go on to punish Gypsy in some pretty big ways after this that John's going to talk about. But John, think about that from the neighbor's perspective. Like, if you had a neighbor that was always in a wheelchair and they just ran up to your door one day, what would you be thinking?
I mean, I would just be astonished, you know, what in the world is happening here? I don't know that your brain would automatically go to this elaborate hoax that Dee Dee has tried to pull for all these years, but you know, you just know something's up, but you have no idea what, right? So her family had kind of suspected that Gypsy was okay. Apparently, this was not the first time that she had gotten out of her chair. I guess her family had seen her get out of her chair and do some stuff and then go back. She would like play with other people and then get back in her chair. So the police would go check on Gypsy. And at this time, Dee Dee admitted that she had lied about the illnesses, but said that she did this in order to keep Gypsy away from her drug-addicted and abusive father. But Jamie, here's the thing. We have no evidence to show that her father was in any way abusive. In fact, everything I saw said that he was doing his best to support Gypsy, but he wasn't allowed to see Gypsy. So he's given a lot of money to Dee Dee every month to care for Gypsy. I mean, I think it's like over $1,000 a month that he's paying in child support, but he's not allowed to have any kind of access to this child. So that's a complete lie as well. After the incident of Gypsy trying to get to the hospital, it said that Dee Dee smashed Gypsy's computer and her phone and told her that if she ever did this again, she would actually smash her fingers. And Jamie, she actually went as far as to actually handcuff Gypsy to her bed each night so that she couldn't go back out. And of course, Gypsy is a typical teenager, you know, despite what her mother says about her, she's a healthy kid. So she's able to find ways to get around some of the rules that Dee Dee has put in place. She would get on the internet while Dee Dee was sleeping. And in 2012, she met another man on a Christian chat group. And we don't really know what that website was. His name was Nicholas Goodajohn.
Goodajohn was a 23-year-old man from Wisconsin. Gypsy seemed to really care about him. Of course, their relationship started out entirely online, which I know people meet that way often and end up, quote-unquote, falling in love. And some of it's real. So Gypsy also believed that Goodajohn really cared about her, and he knew that if she had things she wanted him to do, that he would do his best to get it done. Because he was aware of her situation. He was aware of her condition. Or her lack of conditions might be a better way to say that. So she thought she kind of had him wrapped around her finger. And one thing she would do for him, John, is they talked a lot about sex online. He was really into BDSM, which is dominant and submissive culture where the sexual encounters are somewhat violent and people enjoy that. So eventually they got tired of just having this relationship online and they decided to meet in person. So Gypsy came up with this plan, and part of her plan was to have her mother meet Goodajohn and to kind of approve so that they could see each other more regularly. So that they set up this encounter at a movie theater where they were going to just quote-unquote randomly meet, and then that way that Dee Dee could meet him and approve of him and they could have a relationship. So they decided they were going to go to the movies to see the movie, the live-action version of Cinderella. Now, Dee Dee, who I guess when they got there, Gypsy did meet Goodajohn and try to introduce him to Dee Dee, but she was really creeped out that there was a grown adult male there watching Cinderella by himself. So she immediately was turned off by him, and she was having no part of wanting him to be around Gypsy. Now, it's also said, John, that while they were at the theater that night, that they went into the men's bathroom and had sex. Which, the questions for me there are about how did she get away from her mother for that amount of time? Did she roll her wheelchair in there? That seems like it would have been a bit of a task. So I guess I have logistical questions of how that happened, but that's kind of what all parties agree to. And so then they finish the movie and they go home, and it was after this meeting when Dee Dee kind of forbade Gypsy from ever talking to Goodajohn again that she started pushing on Nicholas a little bit more to see how much she could get him to do for her. And eventually she asked him to help get rid of her mother.
Now, he would say that he was doing this as a way to help Gypsy and to kind of save her from everything she'd been going through at home. We do know that Nicholas had a history of mental illness and that he had some criminal issues as well. Apparently he had an issue of indecent exposure. Do we know anything about that incident?
Very little about that. It happened when he was a minor, so it was kind of not on his record anymore.
But we do know, you know, he was kind of into some odd sexual fantasies, and so there's just a lot of stuff going on with him that makes a lot of red flags go up.
Before we get into that, John, let's take a really quick break. We're back, and now we'll get back into the case.
So together, they would end up coming up with a plan that they thought was a perfect way to kill Dee Dee. So in June of 2015, Gypsy would leave gloves on the front porch, and she opened the door to let Nicholas into the house. Gypsy would end up giving him a knife, and they went into another room. Now Nicholas proceeded to attack and kill Dee Dee while she was asleep. He had apparently told Gypsy that he wanted to rape her mother right after he had killed her, but Gypsy didn't want him to do that, so instead she offered to have sex with him instead. So they went into Gypsy's bedroom, and Jamie, just a few feet away from where they had just killed Dee Dee and where her body was still at, they had sex. They would end up grabbing $4,000 in cash and take off to a hotel room for the rest of the night. So just freaking crazy how quickly this escalates and what was going on in the home that night.
It really is. I mean, it's shocking that they went from chatting online to meeting at the movies and hooking up to we are going to plan a murder and escape together. Now, obviously, they weren't great at trying to plan a way to get away with this. But after a few days went by, nothing was reported, and it said the Gypsy saw this, that nothing was on the news, and got concerned. And she actually had a series of posts on a Facebook account that she shared with her mom. You can find those online. They're actually pretty graphic. The posts were about a woman being raped and murdered, and how loud she was screaming, and it even mentions raping someone. So when people saw this, they knew it was serious. So they called authorities, and authorities came to discover Dee Dee's body. And Gypsy would say that's because she didn't want her mother to decay in the house. She wanted her to have a proper burial. Nicholas and Gypsy would also mail the knife to his house in Wisconsin. So they put it in the mail to go to his house, and I guess to dispose of it there so that it wouldn't be on them as they were traveling. So here we have Gypsy, John, that she has figured out that her mom's been lying to her. Her mom's not letting her have these relationships that she wants. I feel like that's that part of it's kind of typical teenage parent relationship stuff. She jumps to getting rid of her mother, to killing her. They have sex right next to where her mom's dead. They steal money, and then they take off to go to John's family's home. Do you feel like she, at any point in this, is having empathy toward what's happening? Like, where do you think her mind is?
Well, I mean, if she had total empathy, she wouldn't have allowed her mother to be murdered. I mean, there's other ways to handle this problem. I mean, you've come up with a scheme to kill somebody. Why not come up with a scheme to alert authorities about what's going on, or have Nicholas call authorities on his own, you know? But, you know, she did stop him from at least raping her mother, and they've made this scheme so that her body wouldn't just sit there and decompose for God knows how long. So, I mean, it sounds kind of weird, Jamie, but there is at least some level of empathy here, but she still allowed, you know, she helped murder her mom. So anyway, man, so authorities automatically assumed that Gypsy had been kidnapped. All her wheelchairs were still in the house. All of her medications were there. So, I mean, that's a safe assumption to make, right?
Yeah, I mean, as far as everybody knew, she was unable to care for herself or unable to get around on her own. So the only plausible explanation for what happened is that somebody took her.
Yeah, it makes sense if you're looking at this from a kind of an outsider's perspective. Well, Jamie, police would end up tracking Gypsy down in Wisconsin. And can you imagine just how shocked everybody was when they realized that she wasn't sick at all? She was a healthy, normal functioning young lady. I mean, can you imagine just how dumbfounded the police had to be? Like, what the crap is happening in this situation? So anyway, the sheriff in Greene County would famously say that things are not always as they appear. He said this in his press conference about the murder, And in the same time, he also urged people to stop giving money to the GoFundMe page that was in support of Dee Dee's burial. He asked people to stop giving money to that. Jamie, we actually have a clip. So what are people going to hear here?
So we're actually going to hear Gypsy's confession. Now, what you're not going to hear is the 15 minutes before in this clip where she is denying what happened. The officer keeps asking her, why did this happen? Why did this happen? And she tries to play dumb and saying, I don't know what happened. My mom was sick. Did she get sick? Is she sick? Is she dead? What happened? I'm so scared. What happened to my mom? So this clip is kind of where she breaks and actually starts to tell a version of what happened. It's still an early version that doesn't match up with everything that we know now, but it's interesting to hear her voice. We talked about it being a squeaky voice, almost like Minnie Mouse. Like, it seems very artificial, but also her take on what happened, on her relationship with her mother and her relationship with Goda John. Now, this is a longer clip. We don't usually play these, but I think it's interesting enough to where it's definitely going to keep your attention.
Sorry, I bite you for living in any house. I'm telling the truth all now. Okay.
I'm proud of you.
I love him so much, but maybe he can get help now. Okay. I'm trying to find like what you
do. Maybe he can.
He killed my mom.
He killed your mom.
Yes, I know it.
How did he do that?
He was supposed to come and visit me.
Okay.
And then I thought we were gonna go outside and we're just gonna sit together for a while on the porch. And
that is your mom's house?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he came inside and he started walking to my mom's room, and I told him that we need to go outside. We need to go outside.
What was your mom doing at that point? Was she asleep or waiting?
She was asleep, and I got up to use the restroom. And at that point, he had put me in the bathroom, and he had locked the door.
Okay.
And he went to my mom's room, and I heard
you heard your mom crying. You heard your mom crying. And you heard your mom calling out your name.
Mm-hmm. She was screaming.
And
he opened the door. And he was covered with his hands on the door. And he had cut himself on his finger.
You know if it was his left hand or his right hand?
It was this hand.
Okay.
And what happened was he commanded me to clean him up.
Okay.
And
how did you do that?
I cleaned things up with wipes. And
with like what kind of wipes?
Baby wipes.
Baby wipes? Okay. What did you do with those baby wipes? Like in the bathroom trash?
In the garbage.
Oh, in the garbage? Okay.
Yeah, so she goes into some details there. You can hear that there does seem to be some empathy and regret. She places a lot more blame on Goda John, which, I mean, we know that he's the one that actually committed the crime, but it wasn't long before they did eventually confess and just tell what happened. So just a few months later in 2015, based on her confession and the fact that all the evidence supported it and they weren't great at covering up what they had done, Gypsy was offered a plea deal for second-degree murder, and she was given a 10-year prison sentence, 85% of which has to be served before she can go on parole. So She's going to be in jail for at least 8.5 years from late 2015. She did this to not go to trial, to not risk capital punishment. And I don't know that they would have charged her with first degree murder anyway, since she didn't actually physically do it, although we have seen that before. Gota John did face a first degree murder charge as well as second degree murder and manslaughter. But due to the circumstances and the fact that Gypsy was a victim of abuse for her entire life and that this murder was of her abuser, the authorities chose not to seek the death penalty. So I want to process some of that at the end with you, John. So Gota John's attorneys would argue that he had an IQ of 82 and he really didn't have the capability to understand fully what was happening. He did have a history of mental illness, which we discussed. They said that he was on the autism spectrum and that he had really a diminished capacity to understand what he was doing and the permanent impact it would have. So not an insanity plea here, but more of an incapable mental illness plea. So it would go to a jury trial. He requested a bench trial with a judge, but then changed his mind. We don't really need those details, but a jury did find him guilty of first-degree murder after just 2 hours of deliberation, which, I mean, they knew that he did it. It was just a matter of figuring out how responsible he was going to be held for it. In February of 2019, so earlier this year, John, he was given a life sentence. He was also given 25 years for the charge of armed criminal action, but that's going to run concurrently with the life sentence, so that's not tacked on. It looks like he's going to appeal this. Like I said, this was earlier this year, so he still has time to appeal, and he's in that process of trying to get that sentence reduced or get the charges changed, and we don't have the details of those appeals yet, but he has been found guilty and given a life sentence.
So let's talk about Dee Dee for a minute. There's of course, you can imagine some mixed emotions about her death from the outside, from the public, and also her family as well. So, Jamie, there's a lot of people who say, of course, she doesn't deserve to die. This was a horrible thing that happened to her in spite of all that she did to Gypsy while Gypsy was growing up. There's a lot of people, including her family members, that says, you know what? She got what she deserved. So a lot of mixed emotions about what happened to Dee Dee. This story was portrayed in films like The Act and Mommy Dead and Dearest. Gypsy has actually tried to sue filmmakers for stealing her story. I think it's pretty interesting. Gypsy, her father, and her stepmother were actually on Dr. Phil back in 2017. Gypsy has went on to say publicly that she feels that she is more free in prison than she ever was at home. So that's a pretty powerful statement when you really think about it. She is more free in prison than she ever was at home. You know what? In prison, she's able to walk. She's able to eat food. She's able to socialize. Those are all things that were taken away from her in her home. Not at all justifying what she did to her mother, but rather just trying to emphasize what her life must have been like at home and how she feels like she's more free in prison is a pretty powerful statement from Gypsy if you really think about it.
It really is, even to the little things. Like, she was forced to shave her head when she was at home. Now she can grow her hair and do things, I guess, that are prison approved or whatever. But she has the ability to make decisions on her own about her future. She's probably going to get out early. There's so much to unpack here, John. I want to go back to the fact that the death penalty was not on the table. Did you agree with, aside from whether we agree with the death penalty or not, procedurally, do you agree with the fact that they left that out?
I don't know, man. This one is very, very complicated. There's a lot of issues we have to look at, but he was charged with first-degree murder, and by law, that is one of the punishments for that crime. So I don't know. I feel like I need a law degree to really answer that question thoroughly.
Yeah, I think the prosecution, the DA's office, has the leeway to not seek it. But they chose not to in this case, and I just found that, I don't know, a point of interest. So
I think, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think that They could have. I mean, I don't think that there's any, I don't know. I think from an outsider's perspective, he murdered a woman. He had a plan. It was definitely premeditated. So I think you could have just as easily have left that on the table, and I don't know that it would have hurt your case at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know.
You know, there were people that actually encouraged Gypsy to go to trial instead of taking a plea deal because, I mean, what jury on earth is going to convict her of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think she would have had a chance to share her story and how she was physically abused and mentally abused from the time she was an infant until where she was at the time. So, you know, a lot of people might have looked at this and said, this is considered self-defense. Like, she may have felt like she had no other way out from the abuse that was happening in her life other than to kill her mom. So I'm sure that's it's an angle the defense may have taken if it would have went to trial. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think she had, I can't imagine a jury looking at this situation and looking at Gypsy and convicting her of second degree murder. So I think those folks were onto something trying to encourage her to go to trial, cause she may have not gotten no jail time at all. But so that's the question, John, would you buy the self-defense angle?
Well, I mean, I would certainly have to think about it for a while because, you know, she was physically abused. She was mentally abused. This mother has so much perceived power in Gypsy's eyes that, you know, I don't know if she would have been able to figure a way out on her own. And her boyfriend, you know, he's a lower functioning man as well. I don't know that he has the ability to critically think about this situation and come up with a better plan than what they had. Look, it's awful. I mean, I do not at all condone what they did, but perhaps in their mind, was this the only way out?
Yeah, so normally I will take a standard stance, and occasionally you will take a radical stance. I'm going to take a radical stance on this case, John. I don't think she should have been prosecuted at all. I see this 100% as self-defense. And I know there are going to be people that say, oh, well, she could have just called the authorities or she could have just done this. Yeah, you say that, but she's in a spot where her mother has told her nobody is going to believe you. Everybody thinks you're mentally disabled. Everybody knows about all your disabilities and your inability to process information. So in her mind, there is no escape.
What happened to her the last time authorities had to come talk to her, right? I mean, she was physically abused. She was handcuffed to a bed. She was told that if she does this again, she's going to have her fingers smashed and broken. That kind of stuff will screw with your mind in a way that you're not able to have cognitive thoughts on the same level as somebody else who's not went through all this stuff.
When somebody is a victim of abuse, you can't expect them to stand back and say, oh, well, here are all the ways I could have gotten out of this situation. Sometimes that they can't process that, or the fear is so overwhelming. In the Elizabeth Smart case, you remember, John, she was being questioned by a police officer about her identity with a police officer in the room, but fear so much overwhelmed her from her captors that she was unable to speak up because she was afraid that somehow she would not be freed and she would be punished for that. Now, I know the physical abuse for Elizabeth Smart and some others that we've covered is possibly more extreme than what Gypsy went through, but I feel like she, in her mind and her understanding of the world and her reality, there was no escape. There was no way to get out of this. Now, again, people are going to say, well, she didn't have to kill her. She could have done other things. In her mind, I don't know that that's possible. I don't know that she understood any other options. So I don't think she should have been prosecuted at all. And that may be, again, a bit of a radical stance. Go to John. That's where it gets kind of tricky for me. If she had done it herself, I would have said full self-defense. Let's move on. Bringing him into it, he did come in from the outside and agree to kill someone. I do feel like he should have been prosecuted for that. I don't know if that's first-degree murder or not. I would have been satisfied with him getting a second-degree murder charge or something like that. But for Gypsy, I do think that this was her way out, and this was fully self-defense from her.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't have any kind of strong argument against what you're saying. I mean, I hate that Dee Dee lost her life, as she certainly, you know, no, I don't think anybody deserves to be murdered for the things that they've done wrong here on Earth. She definitely deserved punishment. She deserved, Gypsy deserved justice. But yeah, I mean, in her mind and everything that had happened her whole life, I don't know that she had a way to think about other ways out. So
yeah, and gaslighting is a term for that. So it's a form of oppression or abuse where you're essentially tricking somebody or manipulating somebody to think about things in a certain way that aren't really reality, but your power and influence over them cause them to believe that. And that's very common in domestic violence situations. And I think that's a big part of mentally why Gypsy was where she was. There does seem to be some movement on legality here. The doctor we mentioned that did put in his notes about the Munchausen by proxy situation, he would later say that, yes, I have ways I can report it if a parent is under-treating a child, but it's very hard for me to communicate when a parent is over-treating, was generally his quote there. But there does seem to be some movement on how Munchausen by proxy is being handled legally. There are people saying that it's going to be more like a medical, the term medical abuse is going to find its way into the child abuse or even domestic abuse categories there for situations like this. And there's some laws being drawn up or proposed that would help people in this situation or physicians in these situations to have more of an angle to report this.
You know, the doctor's backs are kind of against the wall in a lot of these situations, like especially with Gypsy, because, you know, they're not seeing the things that Dee Dee is saying that she sees. So you have to make a decision at that point as a doctor to whether treat the child or not treat. And if you choose not to treat and the child is legitimately sick and you have chosen not to treat, then that comes back on you. So legally, for the doctor's perspective, what's worse for them to do, like to just go ahead and treat the symptoms with whatever medication they have or whatever procedures they have, or to say, you know what, no, I'm not treating, and then end up getting sued when something else worse happens for the child. So, you know, it's easy to give these doctors crap, but in the world we live in today of, you know, all the liability that comes with being a doctor, it's a tough call to make, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree. And it's hopefully these new laws will give them more of a, at least a process to follow to, I don't know, get some conversation going with social services or hospital administration to where we can help some of these, I guess, victims of Munchausen by proxy when this is happening. It is rare. I tried to look up statistics on it, John. It is found that 93% of people that, because it's kind of a condition of DD, right? So people that are doing that, 93% of those are women, but I couldn't get a firm number on how common it is. It is extremely rare, and it's even more rare for it to get to this extreme where it's a life and death situation for everybody involved.
I've worked in the foster care system for over a decade, and I have never seen this firsthand or even heard about this from any of my peers, about this kind of abuse going on. It's a very rare form of child abuse, but it's very severe.
Thanks for hanging out with us, guys, and talking through this case. This is certainly an intriguing one that has some odd twists and turns and really some moral and ethical dilemmas that we don't see every day. So we hope you enjoyed this discussion.
As Jamie mentioned at the top of the show, we don't have any new Patreon members to thank, but we are still just a few away from reaching our 100th Patreon member. And when we hit that 100 number, we're going to take a few minutes to do some phone calls with each and every one of you all. So we're looking forward to getting those scheduled. So if you haven't already subscribed on Patreon, you should think about doing that. For $3 a month, you can get access to a bonus episode. And we have a ton of those up right now. So the first month, you're going to have a lot of cases to listen to. A lot of different content is up there. For a few dollars more, for $7 a month, we'll send you an autograph. And for you know, there's also coffee mugs available on there. So y'all should really think about checking that out.
Yeah, we would love to call and talk to you guys. And after we hit 100, We've got some crazy ideas in mind for 200, so I really want to share those, but I can't till we hit 100. So,
yep. Jamie told me about those yesterday, and it sounds like a whole lot of fun and some big plans coming up soon. So, guys, thank you all so much. If you want to help the show but you're not able to donate on Patreon, the biggest way you can support the show is by leaving a rating and a review. Those are a big way to help our show grow and to be seen by other people. So until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.